actually give a whole talk about treating our work like an athletic event. And when you see it that way, it doesn't mean you don't have fun. And I mean, having a shift rank and hanging with people you just did battle with should never be taken away. But I mean, what's wrong with, like, calling that out a little bit? It almost feels like our industry is growing up a little bit. And I know it's easy to hold on to, like, it's easy to hold on to what was and to really glorify it. And I liked the School of Hard Knocks. I liked how hard life was. I felt like I was doing something not a lot of people could handle. But it doesn't mean it needs to be the norm. And I think to have that stuff challenged, I don't think is that awful.
This collection of the greatest athletes in battle, traveling from one end of the United States to the other, is what big time is all about.
Shut the fuck up for 30 seconds, you might learn something.
Welcome to Mama Food Pod, number one live digital audio industry show for chefs by chefs. Hosted by multi-time Food Network winner and award-winning chef, Chef Plum, and culinary veteran, star of the Food Saver commercial, Chef Jeff. So wrap, date, and rotate because the boys are about to set your Nissan laws. Here are the Good Brothers.
Welcome to Thursday. It's your boy Chef Plum, Chef Jeff, Chef Dan, Plum Love Foods Live, coming at you just like it is in the title, live. And Jeffy, I got to ask an interesting question yesterday.
Hit me.
They said the show is called Plum Love Foods Live, or is it you're just telling us that Plum Love Foods is live? And I said, you know what, that's a damn good question. Let me refer you to our producer, Jeff.
Yeah, and they called me, and I said, it's actually Plum Love Foods, and we're just letting you know that we are live.
Live. That's what we are. Live. Well, we're excited to be hanging out with you tonight. Happy Thursday to you as we inch closer and closer to Thanksgiving. The holiday that I'm not celebrating anymore, if you listened to last week's episode. We're very excited to have this time with you, but the holidays are coming. I got to tell you something, boys. I picked up one of my daughters from school today. She was looking down and out, and I said, Remy, do you want to go to Starbucks and have a coffee or something, or just get something? And, you know, she said, yeah, you know what, Dad, that'd be awesome. I really would like that. So we went to Starbucks. And for some reason, you know, I am a marketer's dream. People love me for their marketing. I see the festive holiday cups at Starbucks, and it just makes me feel warm inside, Dan. Am I a terrible person?
No, it's exactly what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to trigger, and they're bright red as well with a little bit of white. It's supposed to trigger in your mind that, you know, it's something that you want, it's gravitate towards, and makes you feel good.
Listen, there's not an iota in me that enjoys mint in desserts, in drinks, mint candy. I hate all of that shit. But for some reason, when it comes this time of year, when I go to Starbucks, Jeffy, and I see those little red cups and the little peppermint flecks on top of the whipped cream on the picture, I'm like, you know what? I'd love a peppermint latte.
You are a basic bitch.
That's so... You've been nothing but mean to me since you got on the phone. Nothing
PSL season is over.
Listen, I hate mint on ice on desserts. I hate mint generally on everything, but I like it in a salad. But for some reason this time of year, I'd love a little gingerbread mint latte with brown sugar syrup, decaf, half whip, and two Splendas and some tea in it with a couple of milk. Scones. And let me have oat milk, but whole milk on the side.
Word. Extra steam.
And I disagree. I enjoy saying I'll have a grande because I like to be bilingual.
Nice. Listen, I think the vente, the grande, that's like it's really bougie and stupid. And I kind of hate Starbucks for that.
Listen, you can hate them all you want. All I know is that when I got there, I was feeling rather festive when I saw the sign.
I'm trying to make you feel good about yourself.
I didn't buy a coffee drink for myself.
I'm into the pumpkin.
Pumpkin. Okay.
I'm into the pumpkin.
You're like the PSL.
Peppermint? And coffee? Really?
Yeah. The PSLs. You're a fan.
Peppermint spice latte?
No, pumpkin spice. Like? Pumpkin spice latte. Come on. I did a whole thing on NPR about this.
I know. I'm only breaking your balls.
All right. All right. Tonight we got a fun show, friends. We have a great chef joining the program in just a few minutes. We're really excited to talk to him. Chef Jeremy Blutstein is going to join us and tell a little bit of his story. And, man, this guy's kind of been all over the place, Jeffy.
Yeah, he's actually
what the fuck happened?
And kick ass at what?
There was like a 15 seconds of dead air there. Where'd you go? Did I lose you?
15 seconds? I don't think there was 15 seconds.
Anyway, listen. This guy's great. We have a lot of the same circles. I've never met him in person. I look forward to talking to him tonight and telling his story and going from all these executive chef jobs to back to being a private chef. Yeah, I'm excited to hear the story, so that should be pretty fun. And this guy is an amazing advocate for local food, Jeffy.
Yeah, super, super, super local dude. Loves to make amazing shit. I'm really excited to get into his head and get real chefy with him because he's got all sorts of crazy ferments going on. He's like loves to make things, stretch him out. His fish, when he was at Star Island at Gurney's, he was doing some wild shit with fish that people aren't really doing out here, that weren't doing on the East End at all. I ate there a few times. Really, really good time.
And so
good
guy. We'll talk about that. That's a big resort out at the very end of Long Island in Montauk. It's a resort and marina. Actually, it was my favorite place to grab drinks after work until Gurney's bought it. But we'll talk a lot about
that. Gurney's ruins everything.
That's true. We'll talk about that as we get Jeremy on the show here in a few minutes. But first, I got to tell you guys something, man. You know, we do our What Did We Learn segment. We'll do that later. But I recorded for NPR a show all about kosher food. And I got to spend some time with a really cool rabbi, with a wine expert in kosher wine. I learned a lot about that, and I will talk about that later on. But you know what else I got to do was go to this amazing kosher market in West Hartford. And honestly, it hit me how I've been cooking for 25 years. I mean, I know I can cook in a kosher kitchen. I know most of the rules, and whatever I don't know, I'll call Jeff and he'll tell me. So what's crazy, though, is there's a whole different language there, Jeffy, like parv and meshiva
it's called Hebrew. It's the language of the Jews.
Yeah. But what's interesting about that, I thought, is that how little of that is taught to chefs, you know, there's a whole style of cooking there that I don't think that most chefs across the country, maybe us more in the Northeast here, but across the country, in Virginia, I didn't do any kosher cooking. What the fuck was a kosher cook? I had no idea. That's definitely more of an up here thing.
Because in old Virginia, they're not nice to the other races.
What? It's not a race.
I said in old Virginia. Yeah, Jewish is like, it's not a race, but it's kind of like a race, I guess. It's a religion, and it's also like a place?
You're bouncing around my point here, though. Like, I don't fucking... Like, there's not a lot of education when it comes to that style of food. I mean, Dan, how much experience do you have with it? You know,
yeah. Very little latkes and brisket. Very little. And I have Jewish clientele. I've actually been studying, learning as of recently, and listening to that seasoned show.
Oh, what'd you think of the episode?
It was great. I haven't heard the whole thing. I heard the first half of it.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of... you always think about latkes, but there's so many, the donuts. I want to try to make them donuts. And there's a lot of other things that I like to try to make to try to introduce myself to get more familiar with the Jewish foods. Cause I'm not really familiar with it. Cause it isn't something that you definitely hear about.
Well, cause generally it's garbage, to be honest. It's like not good, but there's some that's really good.
I mean, you just came in here a ball of negativity tonight, Jeffy.
Bro, I'm just being honest. I had a kosher guest tonight. I know Jewish food, and it's like generally...
Now you're insulting an entire, like, religious
like
group.
British food and Jewish food. I don't know.
Well, I just thought it was interesting.
A handful of guys that are killing it.
One of the things that I thought was cool, though, was this woman who was there, the chef at this store, gave me the quote from the Bible that it's all kind of based off of, and I was like, man, I don't remember that. That's crazy. Do you remember it, Jeffy? It's like, thou shalt not eat the baby of a mother coated in a mother's milk or something like that. What the fuck?
Yeah, something like that. There's a bunch of that stuff. None of the split hoof. You're not supposed to. It's like the, you know.
I mean, there was an actual quote. There's an actual line in the Bible that says some shit about eating a baby coated in its mother's milk.
It's in Leviticus.
I'm telling you what, these people were high as fuck when they wrote the Bible.
Definitely.
Like, look, we're going to take this baby's in the milk and put it all over the baby. And whatever we do that to, you can't eat. All right, let's see if motherfuckers believe that shit. And they wrote that in there. And inscribed that with their stones.
It's all about being set apart, you know? Like, you're supposed to eat different because you're holy. You're like the holy people. God called you to be holy.
You may not
eat any animal that has a split hoof completely divided and that chews the cud.
There are some
that only chew the cud.
Jesus Christ. I'll tell you what's holy, Jeffy. All the stories in that book. Anyway.
Ouch.
I made myself laugh a little bit there.
Ouch.
I
love the Jesus.
We're going to take a quick...
I love when you guys go at it on religion.
We're going to take a quick break, get our ducks in a row here. We'll be right back here in just a minute. You're checking out Plum Love Foods with Chef Jeff, Chef Dan, and Chef Plum. We'll be back with our new friend, Chef Jeremy Bloodstein. Stay right there.
Yeah.
Today, our world is tainted. Our world is struggling. Our world may never be our world again. Today will be the last today, because tomorrow will feel different. Tomorrow will not be the same. Tomorrow will be a chance to try again, if we let it. We must open our eyes. It must make sense. It must be passed down to a new generation, a generation of hope, a younger generation who may just save our industry, a generation that understands functional and revolts against non-functional. Take a stand and join the fight. Say no to rosemary sprigs, chopped red peppers. Say no to kale leaves, flowers, and balsamic reduction for no reason. Say no to non-functional garnish. Paid for by the Fight Against Non-Functional Garnish, Old People Put on Plates Across America Association.
Oh yeah, Dave. Ergo Chef Knives, the knives used by so many culinary professionals, including all of us here on the program.
From the entry-level Prodigy series to the super sharp Shinzui made from Japanese V10 steel, Ergo Chef has something for everyone.
Hey, listen, every single day I use my Pro Series Santuco and I love it, man. You've seen my knife bag, haven't you? I mean, I've got like three of them in there. It's a great quality knife made by great quality people. And if my word's not enough, just ask guys like Myron Mixon, Guy Fieri, Michael Simon, and tons more.
Tell them you heard about them on Plum Love Foods by using promo code PLUM for a great discount on everything in your order. Knives so sharp, even the great city of Detroit approves.
Get some new gear at ErgoChef.com. Promo code PLUM. That's ErgoChef.com. Plum Love Foods Live right here on a Thursday in November. November 11th at that, Jeffy. Can you believe it, man? I feel like we were just having the summer episodes not too long ago. I feel like it was like yesterday.
Pretty close, man. 11-11. Here we are. Doing the goddamn thing.
Are they doing it big?
Doing it so doing big. Big thing.
Yeah, let me shout out all my veterans out there. Happy Veterans Day.
Good job, Dan. Yeah, no doubt. Hey, Dan, thank you for your service, my friend. You're a veteran here on the program.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for your service, Dan.
Much love. It's...
We appreciate you. We appreciate you. Shout out to all the veterans out there for sure. Give them something nice if you can. Make them some chicken. Everybody likes chicken. Right, Jeffy? No?
Yeah.
Those little hot sauces.
Yeah, give them some of the little hot sauces. That'll be great. Joining us on the program now is a man whose resume reads like a who's who of restaurants in the New York area. This gentleman is an advocate for local food. He is a new father, and he's a pretty funny guy, too, from what I've talked to so far. And, not to mention, is the spokesperson for Red Vein Sorrel, is what it says here on his bio. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the program the one, the only, Chef Jeremy Bloodstein. There he is.
Yeah!
All right. Attaboy, Jeremy.
I think it's actually ambassador of Red Vein Sorrel.
Oh, let me make that note here. Ambassador. Yeah. It's off there. Chef, thanks for joining us, man. We're excited to hang out with you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. It's I think it's been a long time coming.
no doubt about it, man. And we're excited to talk to you about some of the things you've done. And looking at your resume, bro, you've got some serious places on here, man. I got to start right away just with the Gurney Star Island. Bro, when that was Montauk Yacht Club, it was my place. I work in Montauk all summer. I would go there, have drinks afterwards. Gurney bought it. Next thing you know, I'm having to pay for my beer. So I was very upset.
Yeah, sorry I fucked that up for you.
Was that you? God damn it.
It's easy to blame me, so, you know, might as well jump on that train early.
Fuck Jeremy. That's all I'm going to say all next summer. God damn it.
See, there you go, man. There's, like, support groups. You'll be fine.
This fucking guy. Hey, man, listen, we're glad you're here and hanging out with us, and congrats on being a new father. That's pretty awesome. How old's the baby now?
Oh, dude, it's awesome. She's almost 15 months. It's definitely the coolest thing that has ever happened. Period. She is an amazing young lady.
Well, I mean, everybody thinks their own kids are amazing. I thought mine were too until they became teenagers. Then you realize they're
when my daughter was born, my father kind of sat me down. He had this, like, you know, real kind of, you know, listen, asshole, we had to have a talk kind of, you know, dad moment. Right. And he's like, you know. He's like, yeah, that's great. You know, your kid sits up. That's wonderful. You know, like, oh, look, like she like rolls her eyes. I think that's wonderful. He goes, you know, your kids are great until about 14, 15 years old. And then they're going to tell you you're an asshole and that they hate you and that they're pieces of shit. And then at 25, they're going to need something and they're going to come back to you. And then things will be good and you guys will be friends again. I'm like, well, I guess that's good fatherly advice. Thanks, Dad. And I'm like, wait a minute. Fuck, you're talking about me. all this advice is not like, you know, the tangible kid in this conversation is me. You're talking like I was the asshole. I was the one, like, you know, all right, cool, got it, thanks, Dad, wonderful.
That's fucking funny, man. Yeah, that's the way it goes. I have three daughters, and I have twins and an 11-year-old, and I'll tell you what, it is awesome. You know, it's pretty cool to see them grow up, and, you know, but they make mistakes, and, you know, it's things that we made, and there's nothing you can do to tell them. Like, my daughters know everything. I can't tell them anything. And, you know, that shit never changes. And Dan's got two daughters, and Jeffy's got two daughters with his current wife. And, you know, so.
So what you're saying is that the karma train for all of our youths have manifested themselves as daughters.
Yes. It's the world saying, fuck you, we're gonna get you back now, jackass.
So what we're basically breaking this down to is that at some point we were all righteous assholes and douchebags, and our payback is having daughters so that some other righteous asshole douchebag is going to knock on my door at some point and take her out for some shitty meal filled with Red Vein Sorrel and patty pan squash.
I love it. Yes. And hey, if we're lucky, he might mandolin the patty pan squash. Easy now. Easy.
Oh, wow.
Hey, man, listen. So you live out in the Hamptons in New York, right? You live out east full time?
Yeah, man. I grew up in New York City until I was about 10. And then I moved out. My family moved out here. So I've been living on the East End. And back and forth, you know, working in the city and coming back out here, you know, for more than half my life. So the East End is home for me, for sure.
Yeah, I tell people all the time how lucky we are when we're working out there. I mean, we have some of the best seafood, some of the best produce. Like, goddamn, we can get some really nice shit out there, can't we?
Oh, dude, it's just stupid. I mean, you know, the reality is that, you know, the North Fork kind of gets this, like, fairy tale, oh, we have farms and vineyards, and it's so wonderful, and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, yeah, that's great, but, you know, your beaches are full of rocks, and nobody likes people who come off a ferry from fucking New England.
Ouch, easy.
I mean, the South Fork is dope, dude. I mean, we have some of the, you know, some of the best farms, you know, old school, you know, like legends like Foster Farm, you know, Cliff Foster, rest in peace, you know, Mary Lee taking the reins over, and doing it solid, to my day one homie from Hebrew school, Mr. Alex Balsam, who, I've known since, you know, shit, he was at my bar mitzvah. And then, you know, you have the institutions of Quail Hill, you know, Scott Chesky laying down the law with, you know, one of the first TSAs in the country, and Leighton Gunther kind of taking over from there. And then, you know, the lovely ladies at Amber Waves, reviving a really cool property that was, you know, special to me as a kid, at the old Amagansett Farmers Market, which is now Amber Waves. And then, you know, there's little pockets of love all over the place. You got Stone's Throw, you got Art Ludlow doing crazy shit over at Mecotts Bay Dairy, Jim and Jennifer at Pike Farm. I mean, and then you dip into the fishing fleets in Montauk, and it's, you know, it's game over, dude. I mean, it's South Fork really produces some crazy shit.
It's amazing. I have a guy, I guess, scallops from out in Montauk that I literally meet him behind Gossman's. He gives me a, you know, a 3 gallon fucking Ziploc bag, and I give him $30, and that's it. It's like a drug deal, but with scallops. It's amazing.
Oh, dude! I mean, Chris Scola, my scallop hookup forever. I mean, you know, during COVID, he was dropping. He's got his boat's a Rock and Roll out of Montauk. He's a scalloper, commercial scalloper.
Yeah.
And during COVID, he's like dropping me off pounds of scallops. He's like, "Look, man," he's like, "you know, your wife's pregnant. You got to eat those scallops. Get that baby brain food going." And you know, ever since, I mean, my kid eats fish every day.
She's
15 months old, and it, you know, we get it from him. So it's an awesome community. It's an awesome place to live. And from a cooking perspective, you really can't ask for anything better.
No,
I mean, you have the ability for true farm to table, not like I order tomatoes once and put them on my menu and don't change the verbiage all year long bullshit that most people do out here. But you know, with the temperate climate that we get from the ocean, from the marine layer, you know, there's crops coming out of the ground 10 months out of the year. You know, there's that weird kind of like, whoa, fuck moment in the end of February, beginning of March, where you're like, I'm going to have to fake the funk here with something.
Right, right.
But that's where you get into like all of your canned and fermented and pickled stuff that, you know, you try not to sound like the borscht belt on your menus, but, you know, you do what you can.
Well, we definitely got to talk a little bit about that. Jeff, we might want to introduce Chef here to our buddy, Chef Bun. Bun Lai is a buddy of mine who is all about sustainability, and you know, he eats invasive species of things.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty remarkable what this guy does. I think you really dig the way he fucking cooks. It's crazy. Like, he's catching these tiny little invasive crabs on the beach and fucking making sushi out of them. It's pretty dope.
Dude, that's dope. I mean, I think that, you know, as chefs, if sustainability isn't at the forefront of how you cook, then you're kind of in it for the wrong reason. You know, cooking seasonally and cooking locally, I mean, there's not one aspect of your cooking that doesn't benefit from the guest to you to being able to sleep better at night. I mean, it's a no-brainer that people kind of pass over, which is I would say aggravating at the least, but
yeah,
then you'll get me all fired. Then you'll get me all fired up.
Well, bro, I love what you said there. You know? I love how you said the guest, because I think so much in this industry now, chefs in particular are forgetting that. I mean, we serve people. We're in the hospitality industry. We're here to serve people. We use our hands and we make food and we serve it to guests. That's what we do.
Yes.
It's not about you. It's not about, can I take this amazing Instagram food picture and put it up? Listen, you take a great picture, cool. But it's not it's too many people. I think there's too many people getting into it for the wrong reasons now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no. I mean, the wrong reasons have always kind of been there, because it's the path of least resistance. But you know, you find the people that you know, swim up, you know, upstream and make that. Look, anyone can get off of an 18-hour shift and go on, you know, fucking Baldor's order matrix and, you know, have their shit show up. Well, maybe not show up on time because it's Baldor, but you know. But you know, the difference is, you know, getting on the phone and calling 15 people on the end of your shift, not an order matrix, and leaving a voicemail or you know on someone's phone or sending them a text, and the reality is that person is going to wake up and go and pick or harvest or you know, and that's what's real. And it's tough, man. I mean, you know, look, Gurney's is Gurney's. I'm not even going to go down that road of toxic whatever. But the reality is what my sous chef Andrew Mahoney and I did that opening year at Star Island was we ran, I guess a gag clause would keep me from giving you the number, but a shit ton of money through that place. We only used the farms, man. The only thing in my walk-ins that wasn't from Bridgehampton to Montauk was citrus for the bar program and tropical fruit because we're a fucking resort and have to have it.
Yeah. You know, I just want to so everybody knows what he's talking about. Gurney's is a very corporate, hoity-toity resort type place. And there's several of them all across the country. I think there's one in Miami chef in there. I mean, there's several of them.
No, they've got two in Montauk. There's one in Newport, and I believe they're opening something in Arizona or something like that. But it's not about Gurney's. The point of it is that the common misconception is that it's too hard, too expensive, and not possible to run large scale food and beverage based on local supply chains. And the reality is that that's just bullshit. You know, whatever, I'll say it. We did 17 million in food and beverage in 8 months and ran it strictly off. We ran it strictly off the farms. You know, I ran a 21% food cost across three different concepts, which were developed in-room dining for 96 rooms, 235 boat slips and banquets and events all run off the farms.
That's crazy. That's what I wanted to ask you. How were they resistant to you? I was trying to clarify what Gurney's was because it's a big. You know, I've worked at a very.
No, they weren't.
Were they resistant to getting produce that way and stuff or no?
No, I mean it kind of fucked up all. It kind of fucked up the original Gurney's because you know they don't do that, and so like it made them kind of look within and be like, oh, why aren't we doing this? And the reality is that it takes the caliber of person that's running it to be able to do it. And they did not have that at the original Gurney's at all. You know, they had some Muppet operating.
Can I ask you a question about that? What kind of food costs were you running with using all local like that? Was it a lot higher than if you were using like Booty Whack Baldor, as you like to call them?
Wait, chef, I just want to guess. I want to guess 21%.
Yeah. It was, you know, end of year P&L had me at 21% for the year. But look, you know, you
17 million.
You're allowed to, you know, when you're running at food and beverage out here, you have a little bit of more leeway than you do in most places as far as pricing, because you're doing 80% of your revenue in 60 days for the year. So you have that crazy advantage. You also have the advantage that you're in a resort, and so you know there are some liberties that you can take. You know, when it comes to basically breakfast kind of covers the day.
Wow.
When you it's like the McDonald's. It's like the McDonald's model. You know, you're making so much money at breakfast that you know by lunchtime you're pure profit.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
But it's doable.
I gotta be honest. I feel like it's only doable out here. I mean, I've cooked all over the place and a lot of places where your check average is $22.
Right. If you're in Lake Grove, Ohio, how much can you charge for an entree?
Exactly.
You know, if you throw a $30 entree on there, they're going to shit their pants. If you're throwing a $30 entree on here, you're cheap. You know,
I mean, I've said it before. When I first moved here, what blew my mind, I worked at the Paradise when we did breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And we're open for breakfast, and I bitched. And then I worked a breakfast shift at price, and I was like, $10.50 for two eggs. I'm like, does that come with hash browns and this and that? And they were like, no, it's two eggs.
Yeah, that's just closed. They had a 27-year run of serving $25 two eggs with like a little bit of Satter Farm Sad Mescaline greens on the side.
That's what we did. We did an orange. We did twirl on top of the mescaline. Two eggs. $10.50, and I was like, fuck it, let's run breakfast.
Yeah, dude. I mean, there's certain chefs who don't like to bake, right? There's certain chefs that don't like to do breakfast. There's certain chefs that shit on brunch like it's their fucking, you know, it's their ex-wife, whatever. the reality is that, you know, if you have half a fucking brain and you can, you anything you're doing for breakfast has extremely fast cooking proteins, you can bang people out for money. Your turn time is 25 minutes. You get people in, you get them out. And by the time you're running into you know, your lunch and dinner services, you can serve whatever the fuck you want. Yeah. Because you've covered your cost.
Absolutely. I mean, it sounds like such a terrible way to think about it, but it's the truth. It's a very smart way to think about it.
You know, and it allows you to have more freedom, right? I mean, you do things like that, and then you also, you know, Andrew worked with me at Almond when I had my tenure there, which you know, Jason Wiener's is fucking Jason Wiener's a mensch among mensch among menches.
I love that. Super local vor. Yeah, he kicks ass with that.
Know, I mean, look, if I told my wife, if I was ever going to switch teams, that I would have to call Jason's wife and tell her that Jason would be the guy to switch teams for. But, you know, the reality is that, nice. You know, that Andrew came with me. soap run down the crack of a man's ass. But, you know, we operated a no-waste kitchen. I mean, you know, my wife was the beverage director for both properties until those lovely people shit-canned her 4 months pregnant during a pandemic. They're really great.
Nice
but she was the beverage director. She was the beverage director for both properties. And, you know, so the bartenders are notorious for, you know, just wasting shit, right? And just throwing away shit and whatever. But, you know, she had them dialed in where they were saving their pineapple peels and their strawberry tops and, you know, blah, 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 all their garnish game that, you know, went over. And we're fermenting them into vinegars, and they're becoming into production for service and for banquets. You know, wow. We're taking anything that we possibly could and turning into anything, all fish scraps. We're doing fish charcuterie. We're hanging, fish sausage, chorizo, octopus and tuna chorizo, like taking the head from octopus and the bloodlines from tuna and you know, making kielbasa. Like, what? Like, why the fuck not? Yeah. And the reality is that would have gone in the garbage. And the reality is like, how many people are going to see that on a menu or like hear that as a special and actually order it? You're probably three, right? But if those three people order it, the reality is that, like, if those three people order it, that's a sale that you wouldn't have already had. And those things start adding up, man. And, like, you know, that's real. And so, you know, that's how you do it. And that's how you make it work. Now, the supply chain is a fucking nightmare, right? You know, Balsam is like a straight up purveyor, right? Yes. Order, they show up, they deliver, everything's where it should be, yada, yada, yada. I mean, I can't even tell you. Alex Balsam and I have known each other since we were kids, and he had this like 4x8 sheet of plywood in his room when he was a kid that had like die cast Ertl tractors with like a barn, and it was like a diorama thing that he like used to set up in his fucking room. Yo, we were like 10, bro. And you know, the reality is that everything he has that was on that board as a child, he now has in real life.
That's
like
very
it's fucking
cool.
Crazy.
Just so like, everyone knows, so Balsam Farm is a pretty big farm out in Amagansett, which is in the Hamptons of Long Island.
I mean, Great. You're talking in a place where an acre of land is what, you know, between 700 and $1 million, depending on where you are out here.
Easy.
And he's farming
more
over,
now,
he's
baby. Farming, since the pandemic, it's fucking way up.
He's farming over 100 acres, employing 80 people on the books with, like, you know, full workers' comp insurance and everything else, which is so rare in the farming industry. I mean, Balsam is like as legit as it gets.
And it's great product. You have like these... great product. I'm friends with Ian over there, actually. That's who I know.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
You know, these Balsam does, you know, Balsam delivers. Balsam, you know, acts like a purveyor would. And then you deal with the smaller farms like Quail Hill, which, you know, has its incredible CSA membership, but they're also doing wholesale, but they can't, they don't have the reach or as Balsam does. And Amberway is doing its thing as well. And, but then there's, you know, those three are the big cogs in the wheel because, you know, you can kind of fill whatever you need out of all three, and they deliver, which is like, you know, that's great. But, you know, Foster Farms, Susanna and Mary Lee are putting out some of the illest shit, you know, in Sagaponack, but there's absolutely no way that they're going to deliver to me in Montauk during the summer. So what do? You know, you're like, all right, well, I'm calling in a favor. And I had Mary Lee dropping in my driveway. I would come home and there'd be like 30 farm bins stacked in front of my garage. You find out very quickly what deer eat and what deer don't eat.
Because like, they're eating your fucking order.
Yeah, oh, man. You know, it's like fucking A. But, you know, they're dropping in my driveway. So when I get home from work, it's stacked up. And so in the morning when I'm leaving at 7 a.m. to go roll out there, I'm rolling out, you know, with my Jeep just jam-packed with farm bins everywhere. You know, I mean, that's how we made it work. You know, we had like these like crazy, like, dude, you're going back to Agaponics? I need 20 pounds of grits from Anthony over at Stone's Throw. Shit, I got it. No problem. I'll pick it up. Like, dude, my mom and dad were involved in it. I mean, that's, you know, I'm 41 years old. I'm like, Mom, can you do me a favor? Can
that's
you pick
awesome.
Up honey from this person? Like, I mean, it's fucking crazy, man. Yeah. But, you know, but you can make it happen. And we did. And, like, you know, the excuses for people out here that are made that you can't do it or that it's too hard or it's too expensive is bullshit. It's just you don't know how to manage. You don't know how to manage your plates. You don't know how to manage your cooks. You don't know how to manage your loss, and you don't know how to figure out how to make something out of nothing. And if you figure all those things out, you can do it. It's not easy, but you know, as my boy Andrew says, "Local ain't lazy," and that, you know, that's the damn truth.
Dude, your passion for this stuff just bleeds. Like, I mean, and every time you name a farm or talk about what you're doing with the leftovers and stuff, I can hear it, and that's just such a cool thing. We haven't plugged you at all yet. Dan, can you get Chef Bloodstein's plugs out there for him?
Absolutely. I love this conversation. I'm just sitting back, just having a good time, man. This passion is beautiful. But you can check out Chef Bloodstein at his – I'm saying it wrong, Chef Bloodstein – at his IG, Chef Bloodstein, it's Bloodstein, because I'm probably butchering it. Bloodstein, it's very difficult to say. And you can check his kimchijuice.com and his kimchi juice, throwing out some kimchi, some sriracha sauces and stuff, doing all these things. So check him out.
Yeah, absolutely. Chef,
look,
go ahead, brother. Go ahead. I love that you're going to correct Dan. This makes me happy.
No, Dan, you're good. You're not drinking peppermint spice lattes while you sit down to take a pee like somebody else is. But
yeah, he's talking about you, Jeffy.
No. I don't sit when I pee.
The Red Sorrel Ranger.
I am. No, I'm the Sorrel Select. Ganesha. You know, I'm out here fucking slaying bitches.
The reality of cooking out here is that it's very personal. I mean, you know, these people are your purveyors, but they're also your friends, and they're also the people that you see at the bank, the people that you see waiting online to get a sandwich at the deli. I mean, my wife and I got married in the orchard at Quail Hill. Like, I grew up, you know, down the street from it. Like I said, I've known Alex Balsam. We met in fucking Hebrew school before either one of us had a short and curly anywhere. You know, this area is very special, and cooking in it requires you to you know who you're getting your food from.
Well,
make the effort.
How did you get started in the business, man? I mean, we're roughly the same age. You know, what made you get started in it? Was it by accident, or how did it happen?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of haze back in the, you know.
I do.
But the, you know, like I said, I grew up with Alex. And Alex's parents had like very substantial gardens. His parents' house is right across the street from where Balsam Farm is now. And then Alex kind of took over this little 2-acre piece of land that was in the back behind where Balsam is now. And him and myself and my buddy Chris Rusk, you know, we were like, you know, dorks. We're like, yeah, this is cool. Like, you know, we can drive around farm equipment and like not, you know, not cars yet, but you know, we can like, this is like, okay, this sounds like this might be kind of cool. And Alex kept on going with the farm thing. And I was like, dude, there's no girls here. So, I kind of made the switch into restaurants, and, you know, I started like everybody else does, doing shit jobs, you know, bussing tables, working in the dish pit, you know, doing prep, you know, murdering myself on a mandolin enough to know not to do it, you know, like, and, you know, I worked front of house and I worked back of house. And you know, you guys all know it's intoxicating, right? I mean, in many different ways, right? You know,
hard to get out. It's a total,
you know, fun environment to be in, and it's crazy. And everybody goes out after work, and you know, next thing you know, it's like, the birds are up and you're like, fuck it, I'm just going to go to work. There's no need to sleep and all that other shit. And then you kind of figure it out. And then you're like, okay, well, maybe if I stop being such a fucking hooligan, I might actually be better at this. So 7 years in January, I'm sober. So, you know, I think that you, I think at some point, you know, I kind of stopped being that lunatic, you know, stereotypical, you know, play hard, work hard bullshit that all it does is get you, you know, fucking, you know, anxiety and years off your life, and kind of, you know, did the damn thing. And my food definitely, you know, became more focused, and I kind of became more focused of who I wanted to be within an industry where you spend most of your time trying to replicate someone else's shit, and then you figure out your own shit, and then your own shit is what other people want to do, and then you're like, oh, I guess I'm doing, you know, doing the things that I should be doing. And those kind of lead to projects, right? You know, we all do our mise en place to get through service, and we do our things to change menus and stay on top of things and try and be as what horrible this sounds, as cutting edge as you possibly can be. But then you have like your little passion projects on the side, like you're like, oh, like fermentation, like that's pretty cool. Like I suffer from some pretty like ill autoimmune shit, and you know, gut health is pretty important for me to, you know, combat all that stuff. Like, all right, I'm going to start doing all this stuff. And then you're like, well, it also benefits my food costs because I'm, you know, preserving stuff for the off season. And then it kind of, you go down the rabbit hole, and next thing you know, you have like a boom, boom room in your basement that your wife can't stand because there's all sorts of koji and all sorts of weird shit happening. It smells like farts, and you have like constant, you know, arguments of when are you ever going to use this? You've had misos down here for longer than we've been together. You know, there's like miso envy.
Crazy,
man. Oh yeah, yo, we all get that. If you ferment, your wife hates you a little bit.
Yeah, she does and she doesn't, because like, you know, there's like, just like, wow, this is so good, and you're like, yeah, well, that's that like crazy shit that's going on downstairs in the basement. She's like, yeah, but you know what, you okay, sure. You know, you keep on doing you, and that's fine. But
I think the one that sent my wife over the edge was the porgy fish sauce.
I think that Jason Wiener and I may or may have not caused a widespread investigation of Main Street Bridgehampton when we started our fish sauce production there. We'd got some whiting off of a buddy of mine's boat out of Montauk, and I did a 10-gallon bucket of whiting fish sauce, and then we did striped bass head fish sauce. And as you know, like that first like 3 months, it's like you're waiting for the toxic Avenger to kind of jump out at you and punch you in the face. I mean, it smells like death. I mean, I spent some time in Southeast Asia, kind of, you know, doing, you know, walking around and eating and cooking and all that kind of good stuff. And, you know, it's one thing when you're like in a culture that understands it, but when you have like the fancy white people and their least, you know, Range Rovers driving down, they're like, what the fuck is that smell? And you're like, oh, no, no, it's fine, it's good. Then you also run into the, like, who's going to try it first, right? I mean, it's like the old walk-in finger bang quart container that's not labeled. You got to, like, figure out who's going to try it to see if, like, you should throw it away or you should kind of try and figure to turn it into something. But the fish sauce move, that gets scary quick. And then all of a sudden it's not scary, and you're like, wow, this is great.
Yeah, but the scariness definitely, I can't even imagine that. I mean, so how'd you get into fermenting? Oh, like, dude, was that something you just started doing as an experiment? Like, hey, let me try this once and it's grown into this monster? Or has it always been something you're interested in?
You know, I think that, you know, I guess the start is hot sauce, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of like, you know, as culinary people, we all kind of just like slam as much spicy shit into our face as we possibly can. And then you realize that you can make your own, and then you figure out which way you like to make it your own. And so fermentation was always kind of the route that I went with it. And then it turned into, you know, sauerkraut and kimchi. And then it turned into, you know, all right, well, you know, I'd really like to figure out how to do, you know, make my own shoyu or soy sauce or miso or all this other shit. And then you start ordering cultures from Gem Industries, and then you're like on the fucking terrorist watch list, and then it just, you know.
Dude, I judge the New York Hot Sauce Expo every year. You talk about shoving hot sauce in your face and hot things in your face. And I brought Dan and Jeffy with me this year, and it's an experience. You start having like this euphoria thing going on, and it gets fucking wild.
Yeah, dude. You get fucking high off a hot sauce. I mean, like, you know, look, anybody can make, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to make my red jalapeno hot sauce. Oh, it's so great. Yeah, that's for the white people. When you start getting into, like, the yellow chilies, you know, and, you know, aji limon and aji amarillo and your Ho Chi Minhs and, you know, all these ones that, like, will, like, legit take your face off. Those ones are, like, You gotta mellow that out with like mayo or something if you're ever gonna serve that to someone who's Caucasian. There's no way that, like, you know, when we first started Kimchi Jews, you know, I did a smoked jalapeno, a smoked green jalapeno poblano, a red jalapeno, like traditional, you know, straight up sriracha. And then I think we did a hemp one with David Falkowski, because, like, you know, the white people love to see the marijuana leaf on shit, and, you know, just whatever, why not? And then we did a cherry pepper apple one with cherry peppers from Balsam and apples from the legends, Jen Halsey over at Milkdale. And those are all, they're hot sauces, but they're condiments, right? You know, they're not like, and people are like, oh, dude, you guys should do a really hot one. First of all, habaneros, like, fuck you if you like habaneros. Like, they're just bitter and they just hurt and they, like, you know, it's just, they're just too hot, right? But, you know, you got to give the people what they want. And so, you know, we did a yellow sriracha, and which was the base for our sriracha mayo, our yellow sriracha mayo that we were making at the time. But those hot sauces, like, you sell one bottle, right?
Yeah, that's like the other exactly. Ones, I mean,
the other ones you blow through gallons. And then,
yeah,
you know, it's like,
you make that super hot one. There's two assholes that want it, and after that, it sits in their fridges for all. I mean, yeah, there's no reason to make
forever.
I mean,
there's
a category,
awesome.
Yo, there's a category at the Hot Sauce Expo called the XXX Melt Your Face category, and I mean, it's just stupid hot. But
it's just stupid.
I mean, when you're tasting, there's 22 in the category you have to taste, and you're on like number 7. You're like, why am I living my life this way?
I mean, it does get to be kind of fun at that point. At that point, your tongue is dead.
Oh,
I mean,
dude.
Like, you're not tasting anything. You're like smiling and sweating and trying not to shit your pants while you're up there judging these people. Like, you're like, oh, yeah, this is great. Fucking way you're tasting it after 7 or 8 of them.
Oh, it's good. Dan, you were there this year tasting. That shit's crazy, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I never ate so much cottage cheese in my life, but it was amazing.
Yeah. It's the truth. It's fucking crazy, man. So where are your hot sauces you have now? Are you getting them someplace, you know, like in a store? Can we buy them?
Kimchi Jews is, Jason is kind of holding the torch right now. They're available at L&W Market in Bridgehampton, a little joint we opened up next door to Almond when I was there. Talk about a great market with some really, you know, curated locally sourced goods, and house made shit. I mean, you know, Jason is in his happy place when he's canning and bottling things. I mean, if he could put a lug nut on himself, he would.
Well, come on, we got to get it in your boy Johnny's store, don't we?
Oh, Johnny Bernard, my I love that little meaty tit bastard.
He's listening.
Great, dude.
Shout him out.
Johnny Bernard is, you know, Johnny Bernard sent me an Instagram message. I mean, as creepy as that can be, and he's like, hey, man, you know, I grow mushrooms. I really like to drop you off the sample box. This is like a few years ago.
Right.
And I was like, all right, man, cool. He's like, all right, I'll see you at 11. And I was like, all right, man, see you tomorrow morning. He's like, no, tonight. I was like, what? You know,
he's an animal.
Who's going to drop off a? Yeah. So in walks this kid. And he's like, you know, hey, man. And like, you know, his shit's next level. It's pristine. It's beautiful. And then he like proceeds to tell me he's growing it in his, you know, his parents' garage.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, I'm like, dude, I eat this shit up. Like, this, like, you know, cooking for me is also about the stories and where you, like, the people you're getting it from, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, this, I was like, dude, you're like made for TV. You're like this, like, Long Island kid who's like, you know, doing his thing, and you're really good at it, and you're really passionate about it. And then he kind of branched out and he started slinging uni, and we all know how, you know, that makes, you know, everybody's dick hard. So, you know, and then it was caviar, and then it was truffles, and then, like, all of a sudden, you know, he's doing this, he's doing that, and it's like, man, this kid's probably putting, you know, 3,000 miles a day on his car.
Yeah, I mean, hustling.
It's just insanity, and you're like, you know, you got to root for a guy like that, and you got to support a guy like that, and you got to kind of, you know, do what you can.
I got to be honest, I miss Johnny when he was still my boy. Like, he's still my boy. But I used to be able to call him and be like, hey, John, go find me lotus blossoms. And he would fucking figure it out. And he'd show up at my place with, like, bags full of them. Like, I'd be like, hey, I read an article about a blue apple. Johnny, go find it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he's, you know, look, we all have growing pains. And right now, he's neck deep in horse shit. I mean, you know, opening a retail specialty shop in Southampton is hard enough as it is. Then you tack on the fact that there's absolutely no labor out here and that he's basically running this thing solo.
Yeah.
I get it.
I got a beautiful truffle from Johnny a couple weekends ago for a party. It worked out well. Fucking price was higher than giraffe pussy, but it was a good ass truffle. But they're all expensive now.
You know, look, if it's on someone else's dime, it is what it is, right?
Well, absolutely. But it was fantastic. It was beautiful. It was exactly what I needed for the client, and they were super happy. So, what more do you want?
Look, when he's dropping off live hairy crab from Japan that's been overnighted, I mean, you crazy. Can't shit on a guy like that. You know, who the fuck else are you going to get that from?
Right. No doubt about it.
And the store's tits, man. I mean, it's got all of his love. He's got Kate Kelly in there doing some baked goods.
Yeah.
He's got my boy Derek Patterson's knives, which I mean, you can't fuck with those. For sale in his shop. I mean, there's just he's embracing it as much as someone as new to the East End can.
Yeah.
And so
Well, he's doing a great job. The store is beautiful. He's doing a great job. Big shout out to Johnny. We appreciate him and all the work that he does for sure. Helping all of us get the crazy, weird shit that we might want to have for our clients. So before we get you out of here, man, we haven't talked enough yet about you moved on to – I thought you were a private chef once before. Did you go back to being private now, or is this your first private client? And why did you go back to it?
I had done it earlier in my career. I think that my wife got – my wife is pregnant. And I kind of just had one of those big boy moments where it was like, look, I got to be present for her and I want to be present for this kid. I've watched too many of my friends in this industry, just work. And all of a sudden their kid is in college and they're like, oh fuck. Like I wasn't there for it. And I didn't want to sacrifice that, those moments. And then COVID hit, and so it kind of just made it easy. Like, yeah. It was like, all right, cool. Like the restaurant industry is in the shitter. There's no clear direction from anyone in any form of government of like how the fuck this is going to work, how the fuck they're going to fix it, or even like how anyone's supposed to operate. I mean, anyone who's a restaurateur or a chef running a commercial kitchen in the last 2 years, I fucking salute you. The shit that these guys have done. In the face of the most adversity is incredible. They're fucking heroes. I mean, there's no other industry that thinks on its feet as fast as the restaurant industry does. And watching these guys, pop up outdoor dining, put fucking dividers from four tables, do digital menus,
Crazy, right?
I mean, all these guys putting food in the plastic containers, dude, I would have fucking shot myself in the face. There's no way. There's no fucking way. I mean, look, we're chefs, right? We've got this like rah, rah, rah bullshit. Like we're so mucho macho assholes. But the reality is that like plating and like, that's our art, right? And that's our medium. And that's like where we get our rocks off.
Sure.
And that's why we do this shit. And doing that in a fucking plastic shoebox is fucking soul sucking.
Yeah, I can't imagine doing that, man. And it's just, I have a few chef buddies who have really who embraced it and, kind of got past that. And, my friend Aki runs this amazing Japanese restaurant and he started delivering his own food just to stay in business and keep people working. And, it turned out being really good for him. Yeah, it worked out really. And his food's beautiful. And it turned out really good for him. His takeout business is out of control.
There's certain restaurant models, right, that worked really well for that. Like these like omakase pop-ups, you're like, all right, yeah, that's a no-brainer. Like, beautiful. Like, sushi, easy. Sure, why not? Like, but, like, if you're plating anything that's tempt or anything that, like, can wilt or, like, anything else, dude, you know that no matter how well you cook that dish, that it's going to be some congealed, disgusting piece of shit when someone, opens it 45 minutes later, when it's delivered.
Right,
maybe.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
It's horrible. I mean, damn. How many times have we all banged on the window being like, get that food to the table at the food runners?
Fuck yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're like, now my food's going to take an hour to get there.
Dan, get that man's plugs out there for him, Dan.
Yes, I got you. First of all, I like to say congratulations to you on 7 years sober. I know how hard it is, especially being in the industry. It's not easy. Huge congratulations to you on that. Jeff Bloodstein on his IG.
Jeremy.
Also,
Jeremy.
No, but that's not his IG. His IG is Chef Bloodstein. Jeremy Bloodstein is his name.
I'm just fucking with you.
I got it, Jeff. Thank you.
Oh, shit. Hold up. I got you.
English, motherfucker. Do you speak it?
So, you can catch Chef Jeremy Bloodstein at his IG, Chef Bloodstein, or you can check his Kimchi Juice on IG or kimchijuice.com.
There it is, man. There it is.
Goddamn, everything's beautiful.
Everything is beautiful. Damn, dude, you got so many stories, and you're just such a great talker when it comes to this stuff. You're a good advocate for the industry. I love that. A lot of young chefs listen to this show, young people in the industry. What's a big piece of advice you give somebody young who just got in here, maybe a year cooking, 2 years cooking?
Just make sure your food is honest. Honest food sells, man. You know, and by honest food, I mean, you know, where it comes from, how it gets to you, and the care that you take for it. I mean, when you're getting shit like we get out here, it's our job not to fuck it up.
Boom. That's fucking truth right there. I can't add anything else to that, because, I mean, you're right on point with that. Chef, you're awesome, brother. We appreciate your conversation. Love to have you on again sometime.
Man.
Easy, right? I know it's past your bedtime, but it's not too painful.
No, man. When my kid wakes up at 5, I'll give you a shout.
Holla!
That's what's up.
You've all been there.
That's right. Yes. That's right. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Chef Jeremy Bloodstein. There he is, everybody.
Thank you.
Woo! Yeah. Thank you, brother. We appreciate you. We'll see you on down the road.
Thanks,
good
man.
Brother.
Have see you, buddy.
Thanks a lot.
Later.
There he goes, later. Chef Jeremy Bloodstein joining the program here. A lot of great stuff there, man. There's a lot to unpack with that, man. The love that man has for local food is infectious.
Absolutely. I mean, he grew up in a place where, like you said, it's literally an oasis of amazing produce, seafood. There's farmers from every walk of life. I mean, he didn't even touch on the North Fork. I mean, if you go just a little bit further, there's like goat farms and cheese, and you know, this whole end of Long Island is really, really, really amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I just love that passion that he had there, Dan. You can feel it when a man's talking. You know, and the fermenting of things. It sounds like he's kind of gone crazy with that.
Oh, this whole conversation has been wonderful. But yeah, getting it with the fermenting and taking everything, talking about using the blood from the tuna and the octopus and making fucking chorizo. Like, what the fuck? That's crazy. But it's like, wow, that's that mindset to do these things and to break down everything. And then, of course, you're going to turn that into fermenting and kimchi and sriracha and all that. Like, all the inspiration behind all the local stuff. I mean, this conversation has just been inspirational on another level.
Yeah, it was good times, man. Jeffy, glad you got him to join us. Glad you had him join us here on the program, man. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, no, I'm super happy he got to join us. He had nominated somebody when we were doing the Unsung Heroes, and me and him had a really great conversation, and I knew he was going to be fun on the show. And we have a bunch of like-minded friends. Can we just...
We lost you, Jeffy.
Trade like on the phone.
We lost you, Jeffy.
Fuck. Can you hear me now?
Now I got you.
No, you can't hear me?
No, we can hear you. It's last thing you heard you say is, can we?
I said, can we talk about how much him and Rob Prado sound alike on the phone?
They really do.
It really blew my mind. The first time I was talking to him, I was like, holy shit, Robbie. Oh, no, this is Jeremy. Fuck. Sorry, bro.
That's fucking funny.
But it's that Montauk slang.
Yep. Well, boys, I think it's time to talk about a little what did we learn this week. I'm sure we've all got lots of things that have happened. Dan, you're always good for what did we learn. Can you kick us off?
Absolutely, absolutely, yes. I've been inspired the last few weeks with our guests to like really go into like the nitty-gritty of getting back to food to where it should be. And it kind of got me thinking about, why are we here? What brought us to the place we are today?
Okay.
So in my journey, I started looking. I heard this conversation about Coca-Cola and the caffeine in Coca-Cola. And do you guys ever think about where the caffeine from Coca-Cola comes from?
No. I mean, I'm guessing from the coca plant, right?
There's a very little bit in the coca plant, yes. But
I thought it was in, like, isn't there like a tea or something in there?
So there originally it was black tea. They would gather up all the tea leaves and they would use some of that. But then eventually they got too big for that. They started using coffee from decaffeinated coffee to get some of the caffeine in there. They got too big for that. So then they needed to find something else. So they needed to find a synthetic caffeine.
Okay.
So they were working with a group. Someone might be familiar with Monsanto's.
Yeah.
And they were working on them for sugar substitutes. And through that, they asked them if they could make a caffeine. And so Monsanto's, being Monsanto's, was like, yeah, chemists, we're going to throw some shit together. And they discovered this caffeine, and it actually comes from coal tar.
What?
Coal tar is a byproduct of gas, coal, oil, and basically creates an ammonia. And through that ammonia, you get urea. Urea is the byproduct of the coal tar. And then you go ahead and you mix that with all these other crazy chemicals to get caffeine. And it's just crazy to me that you're taking literally oil, the byproduct of oil. It's not even necessarily the oil.
We're drinking
itself.
Carbon and we're drinking oil, essentially.
Oil, yes.
What the fuck? It's,
yeah, and then you take that and you mix it with, I'm hoping I don't fuck all these words up because it's a lot of chemistry words.
Wow, you're
words,
killing it.
Yo, my words today aren't flowing the way they
should. I like Monsanto's.
Monsatan. That's what they Monsatan. Fucking fuck those guys. That's a
I'm
whole
never
other
drinking
thing.
Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola again.
Any all those beverages, all the monster drinks, Red Bull, all that shit. All of them have this.
God
have this
damn
in
it, Dan! You're ruining everything.
I don't think it's in I don't think it's in the mint lattes though. I don't think it's in a mint latte. So you're saying
That's just semen. They just put semen in those.
All right, Jeffy. Jeffy, what'd you learn this week besides what Jan just told us, which ruins everything?
All right.
He does.
I heard that this week that
he keeps cutting in and out. It's really hard to. Oh boy, Jeffy, we can't hear you. I guess I'll,
Why is my...
I don't know. We keep losing you.
Why is my connection so bad?
I don't know.
It's fucked up.
I don't know. Well, try again really quick. Just say it quick. I learned blah, blah, blah.
All right. I learned there's no more dollar slice in New York City. Inflation has fucked it up.
Who would want a dollar slice anyway? Like a dollar
a slice
of pizza?
No? Pizza.
Nobody wants that.
I thought that was gone.
Man.
What's it up to, $2 now?
Look. You know, as we live here in the state that invented pizza, as we know it, I could tell you, ain't nobody trying to eat a dollar. You're not going to find a dollar slice of pizza here.
Yeah, we don't even have slices of pizza. You buy a whole pizza because it's just so good. You can't have just one. That's why Connecticut has the best pizza, but
that's
whatever.
Right.
It's not even called pizza in Connecticut. It's called like a beats or
something.
That's a
different
thing. Anyway,
a beats is a different thing.
There's no more dollar slices though, bro. And that's like, think about it, man. That's like, if you're a kid in New York City and you get out of school, what do you want? You want a slice of pizza, man. It's a dollar. You know what I mean? Now it's not a dollar. Now it's more. It's fucked up.
The good old days.
Inflation's
right,
a bitch.
Jeffy?
That's what I'm saying, man. How can I just? It just makes me sad. It makes me
them quarter bags of chips are like slices? 75 cents now.
Shit.
It's true.
Well, I don't know if you realize we're all paying $4 a gallon for gas, so and I'm guessing the cost of pizza is going to go up too,
or more.
Yeah. Listen, I'll tell you what I learned this week, and I learned a lot about kosher wines, and I've always thought about kosher wines kind of being garbage. I think of that, maybe I'm saying this word wrong, Jeffy. You're fluent in Hebrew. The Meshevitz, the grape juice, is that the right one I'm thinking of, Jeffy? The wine, kosher wine? Oh, we don't have Jeffy.
Yeah, it's a Kool-Aid. It's like Kool-Aid.
Yeah. But apparently there's some really nice kosher wines out there now, and the world of kosher wine's changing. And, you know, what happens is they have to pasteurize it, and the way they pasteurize it, at least they used to be, is they would boil it for 13 seconds or something like that, where now they've decided they don't have to boil it. They have to bring it to a 165 for a minute. So, you know, that doesn't... I was told that it really destroys the flavor of the wine, but I talked to a wine expert who disagreed and said, no, it doesn't destroy it nearly as bad as you would think it does. So I guess they're doing some great kosher wines these days. I'm excited to get around and try and taste some and see. I would love to hear what you think if you try some kosher wines. Dan, have you ever had a kosher wine?
Oh, I've had that. Shevitz grape shit.
Yeah.
Somebody brought it to me and was like, this is the best thing I ever had. And I tried it and I was like, no, it's not.
Fucking Boone's Farm. And Jeffy, what about you? Good talk, Jeffy. Good talk. Good talk. Hey, Jeffy, what about you? Okay. Yeah, and then, did you like it, Jeffy? Was it good?
He's had to have some good stuff. I mean, knowing what he does for a living, I'm sure there's been plenty of them.
There it is. Well, we're going to put a bow on this one and call it a night, Dan. That's what we're going to do, because it's been a long one. It's been a crazy one, but it's been a fun one. Big shout out to Chef Jeremy Bloodstein for joining us on the program tonight and giving his take on a little bit of everything, breaking down some fermentation, talking the hospitality industry. That guy was a great, good brother. Loved having him on the program. Dan, you want to throw his plugs out there one more time before we get out of here?
Yes. Chef Bloodstein at IG, and then check out the Kimchi Jews and thekimchijews.com and just see what they're doing with some fermented sauces and other beautiful fermented items.
Yeah, it looks great for sure. For Chef Dan, for Chef Jeff, he's somewhere lost here in the metaverse. We'll find him at some point, I promise. I hope he's doing okay. I hope so. I'm Chef Plum. We'll see you guys on down the road next week right here on Plum Love Foods Live. In the meantime, friends, remember, food is one of the most important things we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. Let's give it the time it deserves. We'll see you next week. Peace.
The tower of power, too sweet to be sour. I'm funky like a monkey. Sky's the limit and space is the place.
Thank you for listening to Plum Love Foods Live. See you next week, good brothers and sisters.
Do you think I'm crazy? I've got no